Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 5.
A real classic, Chapter 5 of Journey to the West.
Mm-hmm.
And this chapter, it really just throws us right into, well, the chaos that is Sun Wukong's early time in heaven. It's something else.
Oh, absolutely. You picked a really key moment here. This isn't just, you know, random mischief. It's the buildup, the real start of his big rebellion against heaven.
Right. So our mission today basically is to unpack these first heavenly days for the Monkey King, figure out what really pushed him over the edge.
Exactly. How does managing a peach orchard seem simple enough, right?
Yeah.
Spiral into this massive celestial conflict.
Yeah. And all we've got are these excerpts from chapter 5, but wow, they paint a picture, total escalating chaos.
They really do.
I can see why this material grabbed you. So let's jump in. What's the first thing that stands out about Sun Wukong just arriving, settling into heaven?
Well, the most striking thing right off the bat is how little he cares about the hierarchy. You know, he gets this amazing title, Great Sage Equaling Heaven.
Which sounds pretty important.
Hugely important. But for him, that's it. The title is the thing. Rank, salary, duties. Doesn't seem to register.
Mm.
And he interacts with everyone, the three pure ones, the big emperors, all these constellations, like they're his buddies. Calls them brother.
Calling the Jade Emperor's top guy's brother. That's bold. Or maybe just naive.
I think it's probably a mix, isn't it? There's definitely some naivety. Like, he just doesn't get the centuries of tradition and rank.
Mm-hmm.
But deeper down, it's also just him. He resists being put in a box. He's inherently free, so treating everyone as an equal is just how he operates.
So he's fundamentally clashing with heaven's whole structure from day one, really.
Pretty much. Imagine being, I don't know, Lord of the North Star, and this monkey slaps you on the back saying, hey, brother. Must have been interesting reactions.
Okay, so this carefree wandering probably wasn't sustainable, which leads to true man Zhu Jingyang stepping in. He flags it to the Jade Emperor, right?
Exactly. Zhu Jingyang basically says, look, this guy's got immense power, he's bored, and he's mischievous. This is a recipe for disaster.
Sounds like good foresight.
Yeah, any established system wants stability, right?
Yeah.
And Sun Wukong is pure unpredictability. A wild card.
So the Jade Emperor thinks, okay, let's give him a job, keep him busy.
Mm-hmm.
And the job is managing the Imperial Peach Orchard, the Pantou Orchard. Sounds nice.
It does sound nice. And on one level, it's just that keep him occupied. Maybe channel that energy.
But maybe more to it, like a test.
Definitely feels like a test. Give something incredibly valuable. These peaches are the source of immortality, basically. And see if he can handle the responsibility. See if he can be, you know, integrated.
And Wukong's reaction?
He's thrilled. He thinks it's another promotion, more proof he's the great sage.
Yeah.
He totally misses the strings attached, the sheer value of what he's guarding.
Okay, so he takes the job, throws himself into it. And this orchard, it sounds incredible, like magical.
Oh, it is. The text describes it beautifully. Amazing blossoms, fruit everywhere feels timeless.
Yeah.
But the peaches themselves, that's the real treasure.
Right. Tell us about those. What's so special?
It's divided into three sections. Okay, first, 1,200 trees. Their peaches ripen every 3,000 years. Eat one, you get immortality, feel light, healthy, pretty good.
Just immortality. Okay.
What's next? Next 1,200 trees, they take 6,000 years to ripen. Those grant you eternal youth and let you, like, ascend to the heavens, fly around forever.
Getting better. And the last lot?
The last 1,200 trees. These take 9,000 years. Eat one of those. You become as immortal as heaven and earth themselves. Basically, top-tier, cosmic-level immortality.
Wow. Okay. So the first kind makes you live forever. The second makes you young forever and maybe elevates you. And the third makes you, like, indestructible.
Pretty much captures it. So the responsibility is just immense.
And Wukong gets this at first.
Initially, yeah. He's fascinated. He checks out the trees, learns the cycles, gets really excited about it all. Like, he's found this amazing secret garden.
That doesn't last long, does it? The temptation.
Nope. It's right there. These incredible, powerful fruits, ripe for the taking.
And this is where the trouble really starts. The first act of rebellion.
Yeah, the first real transgression. Stealing the peaches. It seems almost small at first, right? He just wants to taste them.
How does he manage it?
He uses the bit of magic, makes the guards fall asleep. Then he just helps himself to the best, ripest ones.
Sneaky. And driven by just impulse.
Seems like it. Like a kid in a candy store, almost. No real thought for the rules or the consequences. And it wasn't just a one-off thing. He keeps doing it.
Ah, okay. So he's secretly snacking on immortality peaches. This is bound to blow up.
And it does. Right around the time the Queen Mother decides to throw her grand peach banquet. The one in the Jade Pool, the Yaochi.
Right. This is a huge celestial party, isn't it?
The biggest. And Sun Wukong's secret habit, directly impacts it. Because when the Queen Mother sends her 7 fairy maidens to pick the best peaches for the feast,
they find the orchard.
Well, first they run into the guards, who tell them, "Oh, you need permission now. The great sage equaling heaven is in charge," which kind of highlights the authority he was given.
Even though he's already abusing it, so do they find him?
Not right away. There's this funny bit where they look everywhere and eventually find him fast asleep. He'd transformed himself into a tiny little thing, sleeping on a branch, totally passed out from eating too many peaches.
Huh. Okay, so what do the fairies do?
They just kind of shrug, assume he's slacking off somewhere. They don't put two and two together about the missing ripe peaches. They just pick what's left, mostly unripe stuff.
They really underestimate him, don't they?
Totally. They see the mischief, maybe, but not the scale of the potential disruption.
And then he wakes up.
Yeah. And he is furious.
Yeah.
Sees them picking his peaches.
His peaches. Oh, the irony.
Right. He confronts them, yelling about them stealing from him. And the fairies explain, "No, no, we're here for the Queen Mother's banquet." And then they mention the guest list.
The moment of truth.
Exactly. They list all the guests. Buddhas, bodhisattvas, emperors, immortals, every important deity you can imagine.
These are no monkey
games. No great sage equaling heaven. He's not on the list.
Ouch! After getting the big title, the fancy job, he's not invited to the main event.
Massive slap in the face for him. He thought the title meant something, meant inclusion, respect. His reaction is pure indignation. Why am I guarding the fruit for your party if I'm not even invited?
Can't really blame him for being mad from his point of view.
Not really. But his reaction, that's pure Wukong. Impulsive. Powerful.
What does he do?
He casts a spell, freezes the 7 fairies right where they stand, immobilizes them.
Whoa. Okay, that's not just being difficult. That's direct action against heaven's envoys.
It's a serious escalation. It's not just hiding his tracks. It's saying, "I have the power to stop you." Buys him time.
Time for what? What's his next move?
Does he go sulk?
Yeah.
He heads straight for the jade pool where the banquet's being set up.
Bold.
And on the way, he bumps into the barefoot immortal, Chijing Yodoxian.
And does he fight him?
No. Even better. Pure cunning. He spins this tale, tells the immortal the jade emperor wants to see him first over at the Hall of Universal Brightness for, like, a pre-banquet meeting.
And the immortal buys it.
Hook, line, and sinker. The immortal's an honest soul, doesn't suspect a thing, trots off to the wrong place.
Leaving the path clear for Wukong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wukong then impersonates the barefoot immortal and just walks right into the banquet area.
Incredible nerve. What's it like inside?
Amazing spread.
Yeah.
All the food, the decorations, but no guests yet, which probably just fuels his anger more, seeing what he's missing out on.
Uh-huh.
And then he smells the wine, the celestial wine.
Oh, no. Another temptation.
You guessed it. He can't resist. Pulls another trick, uses his hairs to make sleeping bugs, knocks out the wine staff.
And then?
Drinks his fill. Gets properly drunk on heavenly wine.
Okay, so he's eaten forbidden peaches, crashed the party setup. Now he's drunk celestial booze. Surely that's enough.
You think? But no. In his drunken state, he kind of wanders off and stumbles into Lao Tzu's palace. The Dushui Tiangrum.
Lao Tzu, like the Lao Tzu, oh, this is bad.
This is really bad. Probably the biggest mistake yet. Lao Tzu's out giving a lecture somewhere.
Lucky break for Wukong, or unlucky.
Depends how you look at it. Because Wukong finds the golden pellets of immortality. Lao Tzu's Gendan, the super potent elixir stuff.
Yeah.
Sun Wukong sees them. He thinks, "Huh, haven't seen Lao Tzu since I became enlightened.
Right.
Maybe I should try something new." Golden pills. That's the phrase used. Too gray.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He does. He just starts eating them.
Please don't tell me.
Yeah, he gobbles them all down. It's like eating roasted beans. Just scoops them up and eats a lot.
Oh, my goodness. That's not just messing with a party. That's messing with fundamental cosmic power. Stealing from one of the highest beings there is.
Exactly. And at this point, even through the drunken haze, Wukong starts to realize maybe he's gone a bit too far this time.
About time. So what does he do? Repent. Turn himself in.
Huh. No, not Wukong. His thought process is more like, "Uh-oh, this is bad. They're going to be really mad. Best get out of here."
So he runs.
He decides to flee heaven altogether. Heads back down to his own place, Flower Fruit Mountain, back to being king of the monkeys.
And how's his reception there?
Triumphant. At least that's how he plays it. His monkeys are overjoyed to see him, and he immediately starts bragging.
Bragging? About all the chaos he caused.
Oh, yeah. Tells them all about managing the orchard, crashing the party, stealing the wine, and especially about eating Lao Tzu's immortality pills. frames it all like heroic deeds.
Wow. No remorse, just pride.
Seems like it. He needs that validation from his followers. Paints himself as the rebel hero who defied heaven. He even offers to go back and steal more wine for them.
Does he actually do that?
He does. Sneaks back, finds the banquet staff still asleep from his earlier trick, and steals jugs of wine to bring back to his monkeys.
Unbelievable. Meanwhile, back in heaven, I assume things are kicking off.
Total pandemonium. The fairies finally unfreeze, report to the Queen Mother. She goes straight to the Jade Emperor.
And the reports start flooding in.
One after another. Stolen wine for the banquet, whole feast disrupted. Then Lao Tzu shows up, absolutely furious about his missing golden pellets. That's the big one.
The point of no return, maybe?
Definitely feels like it. Stealing immortality elixir from Lao Tzu. That's beyond audacious.
And then the poor barefoot immortal reports being tricked.
Yep. The final straw, the Jade Emperor is enraged, understandably.
So the order goes out.
Capture Sun Wukong, bring him back, and the response is massive.
How massive?
Not just a few guards. We're talking the four heavenly kings, Li Tianwang, Prince Neza, the 28 constellations, the nine planets, loads of other deities, 100,000 celestial troops.
100,000?
Yeah.
Against one monkey.
It shows how seriously they're taking him now. This isn't mischief anymore. It's full-blown rebellion. They need to shut it down hard.
So this huge army descends on Flower Fruit Mountain. What happens first?
They set up this massive blockade, 18 layers of inescapable heavenly nets around the whole mountain. Then the nine planets lead the first charge.
How does that go for them?
Not well. They probably expected an easy win. You know, celestial might against mountain demons.
So they report these nine fierce gods, that's the term used, saw showing up. They're apparently right at the gate, making noise, challenging him.
And the great sage, his first reaction is,
boo, which is roughly, today we have wine, today we get drunk, don't worry about who's right or wrong at the gate.
Wow.
Ooh, Jenna, sort of like, let's just enjoy today, forget about achievements for now.
So is he super confident or just ignoring a massive problem?
Maybe a bit of both. It definitely shows a certain kind of character, maybe arrogance, maybe just supreme confidence, or maybe he just really likes his wine.
Fair enough, but that calm doesn't last, does it?
No, it doesn't. The second report is way more frantic. Total panic.
What do they say this time?
Those nine fierce gods broke the gate down. They're invading.
Okay, gate crashed. That changes things.
Drastically. Now he's angry. The text says he calls them something like these unruly hairy gods. So disrespectful.
Hairy gods. I like that.
Yeah. And then he says, I wasn't going to bother with them, but how dare they come here to bully me?
So crossing the threshold was the trigger. It became personal.
Exactly. The actual invasion of his home turf. That's the line. It shows maybe he has boundaries after all, you know? And it also makes it clear these gods aren't messing around. They're forcing the issue.
Right.
And their mission, well, a star official lays it out pretty clearly. He basically lists the great sage's greatest hits, crime-wise.
Oh, like what?
Like stealing the peaches of immortality, stealing the heavenly wine, crashing the big peach banquet, which is a huge deal, messing with that.
Okay, yeah, that sounds bad.
And then stealing Lao Jun's pills of immortality.
Yeah.
Lao Jun being, you know, a major Taoist figure, plus taking stolen wine back to his mountain to party.
So a whole catalog of offenses. The star official actually says something pretty direct, right?
He does. You've committed these 10 evil sins. First peaches, then wine. Oh, like you keep adding sin upon sin, don't you know? It's a heavy accusation.
They're not subtle about it. And they come with threats, too.
Big time. The official basically says surrender, or else...
Yeah, otherwise we'll flatten this mountain and wreck this cave.
Yikes. So pure intimidation.
Absolutely. And they back it up visually, too.
Mm-hmm. And his attitude when they accuse him, does he deny anything?
Not at all. He basically says, yeah, I took the peaches, drank the wine, ate the pills. So what? You slighted me first. It's pure defiance. Zero respect for their authority.
He really doesn't see himself as bound by their rules at all, does he?
Not in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
He feels wronged, feels he deserves more respect, and their attempt to punish him is just. Unjust. The text describes a massive army. How massive?
It says they surround the whole mountain, Flower and Fruit Mountain.
Right.
Like, watertight, nothing gets in or out.
A total siege.
Mm-hmm. And they set up 18 heavenly nets or battle formations, top and bottom, like a massive trap.
Wow.
And even before fighting, they're right there at the gate, just shouting insults, trying to provoke him.
Okay, so it's a full-scale military and psychological assault. Where does the actual fighting start?
Right at the entrance, basically. The text mentions the head of the Iron Bridge. That seems to be the main way in, and that's where the Celestial Forces make their stand.
Got it. So how does the Great Sage handle this? He's got to respond now, right? The party's definitely over.
Oh, yeah. No more wine. His first move is military. He orders his own commanders, the One-Horned Ghost King, the 72 Cave Kings, his top four generals.
His whole crew.
Pretty much. Tells them to get outside, form ranks, get ready to fight. It's to show no defiance. Maybe he thinks they can handle it.
But maybe not.
Basically, the nine constellations attack all at once, really aggressively.
While the demons are still getting organized.
Exactly. Bam. The nine constellations hit them hard.
And the result.
They get pinned down, push right back to the Iron Bridge, can't even get out of their own territory. It's a definite initial setback for the Sage's forces.
Okay, so maybe the heavens aren't completely outmatched here. At least not initially.
It seems that way for a moment. His followers are overwhelmed. But then...
Then the main event.
The Great Sage himself steps out. And he's got the weapon. The drone. The golden hooped staff.
Ah, the famous staff.
The very one. As thick as a bowl. 12 feet long.
12 feet. Okay, yeah. That's not subtle.
Definitely not. And its appearance, well, it changes everything. The whole dynamic shifts instantly.
So he takes on all nine of them.
Yeah.
By himself.
Yeah. Single-handedly. The description is vivid. He's whirling this massive staff, blocking left, parrying right.
Must have been incredible to see.
Absolutely. And the result... He fights them until they're totally exhausted, dragging their weapons, basically fleeing in defeat.
He just beats all nine gods after they'd overwhelmed his army.
It's an incredible display of personal power. The report they send back confirms it too.
What do they say?
Something like, Pick, that Monkey King is seriously brave and skilled. We couldn't beat him, we lost.
Wow, so the individual power disparity is just immense.
It seems so. One Great Sage versus nine Celestial Gods, and the Sage wins decisively.
But the gods don't just vanish, do they?
You're right. Even as they're beaten back, they regroup enough to keep yelling insults. That stable boy title he hated.
Exactly. A deliberate jab. Calling him that, reminding him of his alleged crimes, even after getting thoroughly thrashed. It shows they're still committed to their mission, or at least the justification for it.
Still, a defeat's a defeat. How does heaven react to this?
The heavenly king in charge gets the news, and the response is immediate escalation. No messing around now.
More troops.
Way more troops, and bigger guns, so to speak. He calls up the four heavenly kings and the 28 constellations.
Okay, those sound like major players. The king immediately dispatches them. A whole new army coming in force. This is a serious upgrade in the celestial firepower being deployed.
A massive escalation. So how does the Great Sage react when he sees this huge army rolling up? Does he finally think, uh-oh, maybe I pushed it too far?
Yeah, you'd think, right. But nope. His reaction is, well, it's pure defiance.
What does he do?
He sees this enormous, powerful new force approaching, and he just yells one thing, open the road or clear the way. Basically, get out of my way.
Seriously. Facing down the four heavenly kings and 28 constellations, and he tells them to move.
That's the attitude. Utterly fearless. Utterly defiant. No sign of backing down, even against overwhelming odds.
Okay, wow. The Celestial Army has discipline. Numbers. They actually managed to capture a lot of Wukong's ordinary demon followers and wolves and things. A real blow to his forces.
But Wukong himself is still fighting.
Oh, yeah. And he pulls out another amazing trick. Plucks out a bunch of his hairs, chews them up, spits them out. They turn into hundreds of identical monkey kings, each one with a copy of his iron staff. Yeah. Suddenly, the Celestial Army is facing hundreds of Wukongs.
Whoa. Clones. That's got to turn the tide.
Completely. It overwhelms the heavenly forces. They're forced to retreat. Sun Wukong wins the first major battle.
Amazing. So he returns to his cave victorious, but his army has taken losses.
Right. And the scene is interesting. His remaining followers are crying over the captured ones, but also cheering wildly because he is safe. A mix of grief and relief.
And Wukong's take on this, is he upset about the captured?
He seems surprisingly okay with it. Almost dismissive of the lesser demons. He focuses on his own victory, his own survival, maybe his key generals. he's still supremely confident he can beat heaven.
A bit cold, maybe? Pragmatic.
Probably a bit of both. Mm-hmm. Shows a certain ruthlessness, perhaps. Mm. Or just absolute self-belief. He doesn't seem shaken anyway. Ready for the next round.
Wow. So that brings us to the end of chapter 5. What a ride. From heavenly official to full-blown rebel leader in one chapter.
It's an incredible arc, isn't it?
So just to wrap up the key points, we've really seen how Sun Wukong's time in heaven went south fast. His initial, maybe naive enjoyment turned sour pretty quickly.
Yeah, that need for recognition, the wounded pride when he wasn't invited to the party, it all spiraled.
From stealing peaches.
To crashing the banquet, getting drunk, and then the huge one, eating Lao Tzu's immortality pills. Each step was bigger, bolder.
Setting the stage perfectly for this massive war between him and all of heaven.
Absolutely. You see the motivation stacking up. It's not just random acts. It's a chain reaction.
It really gives you those aha moments, understanding why things escalated like they did. It's about ambition, yeah. Which leads to a great question to think about, doesn't it? Given who Sun Wukong is, powerful, rebellious, maybe a bit arrogant, was this whole thing doomed from the start?
Good question. The real fireworks are yet to come.